Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Nice suit.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you if the Lakers' latest hiring will actually make any difference. But we start today with Steph Curry.
I'm a shot boy.
The best thing about adversity is it creates opportunity. Opportunity for greatness. Steph Curry has that opportunity tonight when the Warriors take on the Raptors in Game 3. He can elevate himself into the same stratosphere as the basketball immortals. You might think he's already there. He's won 2 regular season MVP awards. He's a 3-time NBA champion. His resume says he's an immortal already. But there are levels to immortality.
Preach.
And right now, Steph isn't on the same level as the all-time greats because he doesn't have his signature NBA Finals moment. You have to dance on the biggest stage to sit at the table with the biggest stars. I'm not talking about being named Finals MVP. I'm talking about delivering during the NBA Finals when everything is stacked against you. I'm talking about a magical performance that makes sports fans believe you can turn Gatorade into wine. Game 6, 1980 NBA Finals. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is out with a severe ankle injury. 20-year-old Magic Johnson started at center, played all 5 positions, scored 42 points, grabbed 15 rebounds, and handed out a 7 assists. It's the greatest game played in NBA history. Game 5, 1997 NBA Finals. Michael Jordan has a stomach virus and flu-like symptoms. The series with the Jazz is tied 2-2. Jordan plays 44 minutes. Scores 38 points. Game 6, 1988 NBA Finals. Early third quarter, Isaiah Thomas badly twists his ankle. He scores 25 points in the third quarter and 43 points for the game. The Pistons lost the game and eventually the series, but all anyone remembers is Zeke's courage. The 2016 NBA Finals. The Cavaliers trail 3-1. LeBron James scores 41 points in Game 5 and 6. And puts up a triple-double in Game 7 to win the series. That's what the all-time greats do. Tonight, the Golden State Warriors will play without Kevin Durant. If Klay Thompson plays, he'll be limited with a strained left hamstring. Andre Iguodala is running on fumes and milk of the poppy. Toronto is likely going to run its box-and-one defense designed to stop Steph Curry. The ingredients are in place for a historic night for Steph Curry. Adversity has created an opportunity. Does he need to have a big game to justify his superstardom? No, absolutely not. He's awesome. He changed the way basketball is played. But I spent this morning researching the greatest games in NBA Finals history, and it's a who's who of the greatest players in NBA history. It's Magic, Michael, Isaiah, LeBron, Tim Duncan, Kareem, Larry Bird, Bill Russell, Shaq, Kobe, Hakeem. The guys who carried the league carried their teams in the NBA Finals. They put exclamation points on their greatness by performing magic on the biggest stage. With Durant likely to return for Game 4, this might be Steph's last best chance to do what the all-time greats always do. They use adversity to elevate themselves. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NBA analyst Jim Jackson and Bleacher Report's Rick Bucher. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yes.
Does Steph need a signature Finals moment to be an all-time great?
Boy, you been hanging with the millennials, huh? for real. Oh, Whitlock, rich. Like, be all-time great.
All these subcategories, man. Yeah. No, yeah. He doesn't need a signature moment to validate who he is. Because who he is who he is and who he's going to be in terms of the consensus about his legacy. He is a future Hall of Famer, which in the NBA, I think some people sneeze at, but which is still amazing. But beyond that, while still dribbling the basketball, has been deemed the best shooter of all time. Breathe, y'all. Understand what that is in terms of an accolade, in terms of respect. Of all the people who've ever played the game, you are the best shooter of all time. Let's not get greedy now. Let's not try and go any farther. Let's not try to get into that tier one, the GOAT conversation. Because the way I look at athletics is simple. It's either you're a Hall of Famer, or you're top 10, or you're the GOAT. All the rest of these categories are for barbershops. That's my point. So tonight
he can get it.
Hell no. Kobe Bryant, as some people say, is Friends top 10. Some people say he should be in the GOAT conversation. But if you're saying he's going to surpass a Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson.
No, he's not Magic.
Tim Duncan. Well, who are you taking out of the consensus top 10 put Steph Curry in there? By that point, there's nothing he can do tonight to elevate and enhance his legacy.
This is the superpower of Steph Curry, is that he knows exactly who he is. And he knows he's not Kobe. He knows he's not Michael. He knows he's not LeBron. And his entire focus yes, yes. It's why we had this conversation the other day. You thought that he wanted KD out so that he could prove himself.
I haven't said that, but go ahead.
I thought you made that point.
I think most great people are delusional about who they are. And I think that's a part of great.
Oh, yeah. And he's the exception in terms of understanding exactly. That's what makes him great. This Warriors collectively, it's what makes them great because they understand that they need each other. Draymond knows that not playing with Klay and Steph, he wouldn't be the same player. Klay knows the same. The one guy, the outlier, is KD. KD's the one guy who says, it's nice that I get to play with you, but I don't know that I need you. Steph and the rest believe that. And so he could have a moment, and it still wouldn't put him in that circle.
Based off that, I want to frame this up a little different for you, Jim, just a little bit. So Rick is arguing to me that Steph Curry's not sitting there going, oh, man, I got a chance to just act a fool tonight and put on a performance that no one believes. I got nothing to lose. The same way I believe Magic before that game 6 in 19, Kareem's out, I get the clown. And I'm going to put my name permanently on this game. Steph's not thinking that way going into tonight.
I believe Steph is thinking, first of all, let's back up. Steph is playing with house money because the guys that you mentioned in your Whitlock, all those guys had expectations coming out of either high school, college, or went straight to the league.
Yep.
They were expected for greatness. Steph wasn't.
Right.
So he's playing with house money. Everything he's done up to this point has kind of elevated who he is as a player. He's changed the dynamics of how we all play the game, whether that's NBA, internationally, whether that's AAU, high school. Steph's imprint is on that. So his greatness is always going to be, I think, highlighted when you talk about basketball. Can he step into the top echelon? Does he think that tonight, okay, I got to go out there and this is a signature moment for me? No. I think Steph thinks I need to do whatever I need to do to win the game and let the rest speak for itself. Because the challenge he's going to have tonight, depending on what happens with Klay, it's not going to be an easy task.
No.
It's not.
Impossible.
But that's what makes it great. Because as a player, if I think a lot of times, if you go out there and try to say, well, I'm about to go get 30, a lot of times it don't happen. It don't happen. Because it's a tougher ask when you have to press the button a little bit. I think when he plays like he plays and allow his game to be who he is, the rest go speak for
itself. So y'all all are arguing to me is that he's different mentally than all the other all-time greats. Because I know what Kobe would be thinking tonight in the same.
Different person.
Different I know person, what Michael would be thinking.
Different person.
I know what Magic.
In your own example, Magic Johnson, rookie, comes out there, realizes Kareem down. Oh, he didn't even know about the veteran presence of being an NBA player. He just went for broke and balled out. Steph Curry, because of his veteran presence, understands it's a collective effort. He has gotten this dynasty by looking at it as a collective. So what will he do tonight? He will assess it properly. He does a different calculus than you would do in your rookie season of Magic Johnson. And he's not delusional to his greatness, which is unique, which is why their culture is unique, is why they can bring in a superstar player who's better than their own superstar player and still not be fragmented.
And off of this, those other players, too, were built a little bit differently size, physique-wise.
They
could take over a game. Steph is not built like that. If Michael wanted to control the narrative, he can get to the post. He can get to the low post, high post, wing. LeBron, the same thing. Kobe, Tim Duncan. Steph, being a perimeter smaller player, I went back to the game when they played the second year against Cleveland, okay? It was Amon Shumpert and J.R. Smith. They can be more physical with Steph away from the ball. They can take him out of situations. Mm. It was things against LeBron or against Kobe, against Mike, against Shaq, you just weren't going to take away. Mm. With Steph, because of his stature, there are things defensively that you can take away.
He has physical limitations, unlike the other guys that we mentioned. The beauty of it is he knows it. And while he has the ego to say, I'm – I can knock down that shot. You want me to go win the game? I'll try to win the game. But he also has the humility to say, if it's not my turn, if I'm going to be a decoy, if I'm going to draw everybody away and let somebody, I'm going to let Draymond run things, I'm going to let Quinn Cook hit shots, he's willing to allow that to happen. Those other guys that you mentioned, they only knew one way to do it, which was, it's got to come through me.
And to that point, Steph, in his own words, in response to the praise, the respect that came from Andre Iguodala saying, I'm playing for your legacy, Steph says, I don't even need praise and validation. People know who I am, especially these last 5 years. I have cemented who I am, and I'm comfortable in my own skin. Everyone else you named, that would have irked them. That would have ticked them. That would have made you say, oh, I'm going to go above my head in next game. I'm going to show you. Yeah. That's not Steph.
He's an alien. Jason, I understand why you're confused, because he has all the trappings. He has all the trappings of being a superstar. But he understands that he's not, he knows to his core, I'm not these guys.
Okay, oh, I get it. Yeah. And I get their culture, and I get where he comes from and his approach and what has worked. But my thesis is based on adversity creates opportunities.
Sure.
So tonight he's in a rare situation where it's likely Klay won't play, and if he does, he'll be very limited. KD's not gonna play. The only way they win, in my view, tonight is if we see 40, if we see a Jordan-like flu game, if we see, again, Isaiah Thomas didn't have the physical gifts,
right. But
he got put into a position like, oh, there's only one way to get it done, and I'm about to drag this ankle and try to do it. And that's what brings out great. There are rare opportunities. This may be his last chance, and I think he will cape up tonight because it's the right thing to do.
But the situations and circumstances are so different. When Jordan had the flu, Pippen and Rob, they were still out there playing, okay? He didn't have his ace on the wing gone. When Isaiah was there, he still had a full complement of his team. Yeah, he was able to go out there and take over, but the defense wasn't solely focused on Isaiah where they can take him away.
But, Jim, I'm going to go with your point.
Right.
He's playing with house money, and they've given him even more house money tonight. If Steph goes 10 of 40 tonight, no one cares. He died on his sword. Didn't have anybody. He did the best that he could.
Mm-hmm.
But if he goes 20 or 40, my God, they're going to carry him off, and we'll be talking about, oh, my God, Steph Curry.
If he takes 40 shots, they lose. I mean, this is why I have the Raptors winning. Mm-hmm. If he tries to force the issue, it's not going to work because they're going to put all their attention on him and make the game difficult for him. He's willing to say, I can't win that way, and the most important thing for me is not to win my way, but simply to win.
If he doesn't take 30 shots tonight, they can't win.
He's capable.
I understand you need to force some, but here's the difference: the 30 shots is all about efficiency and how you get those shots, when you take those shots. I think the key is early on that his teammates make some shots early. That loosens it up for him to be able to do what he does best. And again, taking 30 shots is one thing, but taking 30 shots at the critical time, when it's needed, how it's shot, that is more important to me and how Golden State plays.
It's also going to be interesting if they take him off the ball, if they don't allow the trap to come high and they simply run him off the ball, then I could see him getting those shots. But the offense isn't going to run through him. He may be taking the shots, but ultimately it's going to be somebody else.
No, Draymond's going to run through Draymond, and he's going to take. But any chance, injury riddle tonight, any chance the Warriors win tonight?
Any chance?
Yeah, do you think?
I think they will win. I don't think that a compromised Toronto Raptors team can take advantage of a hobbled Warriors team at home. Think about it. Kawhi Leonard, in terms of his shooting percentage and his three-point percentage, has went down every single round of these playoffs, all the way from the top, all the way down. If you look at this from first round to now, what you're seeing is a guy who's compromised. Reports are he has the quad issue, and that's because of the compensation from the knee. All of that says is, he still has the power. Yeah, he can still knock you out the air. But at the same time, he doesn't have his legs under him. So now you're asking role players or guys who are up and coming like a Siakam to go on the road in Oracle, Game 3, Dynastic Warriors, show up and give us something that's reliable. I'm betting on the Warriors and their DNA, that championship medal.
I like the Warriors, too, at home. Now, hobbled, yes. If Klay doesn't play, that's a little iffy situation. But I've always gone like this. Your role players play better at home. On the opposing team, Generally, they don't. Mm-hmm. Can Van Vliet give you what he's been giving you? You know, that's it for me. Is this the game that Kyle Lowry, even though he's not a complimentary player, but he is somewhat to Kawhi.
He's unreliable.
It's time for him to have a game. And you can see that maybe in a scenario like tonight. But all that has to come together in order for them to win on the road.
This is what makes this series so compelling right now, because I feel as if Kawhi might try to take over and take 30, 40 shots. And I believe that would be as big a mistake for Toronto as it would be for Golden State with Steph at this point, because he clearly can't be efficient. So you got to trust your teammates. That's what Steph's going to have to do, and I believe Kawhi's going to have to do it. And then
you like the Warriors tonight too?
No, I have Raptors winning.
Because?
Because I think Klay is going to be compromised, because I don't believe that Pascal Siakam is going to be afraid of the moment or the stage. They've gone into Oracle. I've been in Oracle a lot this year. It doesn't hold the same intimidation factor. The fans will be geeked up. They were against Portland. They kind of found their mojo again. But teams aren't afraid of going in there when the Warriors get going the same way they have in past.
So you went there during the finals this year? Oh, no, you know why? Because this is the first game of the finals in Oracle.
Hey,
you know what? They're just like the players. The fans respond to the players. The players are kind of snoozing through the regular season. The fans are kind of snoozing through the regular season. They know what it's about.
It's like a G for a ticket these days. You got a different fan base. You got people that are coming in with an expectation. They don't come with the same energy.
I think if Klay sits, I think Toronto's going to win. If Klay goes out there and gives them 25 minutes of anything, then I see a way with Steph playing a hell of an offensive game. And I think the other guy that I really could have talked about here instead of Steph, is Draymond Green. I think this is the night where Draymond Green could go bonkers. And not with a bunch of points, but just 15 rebounds, seven or five block shots, 12 assists, defense, and just a he could just have an all-time great Draymond Green, and that could propel.
But Klay putting his jersey on the court between the white lines is not enough. A hamstring, one, you're in your own head the entire way, so that's going to compromise him himself. But he's created another opponent if he plays tonight. It's because he's going to say, am I even ready to be out here, let alone deal what is coming his way in terms of adversity and defense. So I don't think Klay is going to matter either way. I would sit him for those reasons, because I don't think Klay Thompson is going to go out there in sixth gear and give you what you need. It's better to rest him for game four.
I think that coaches look at, you can't give a game away if he's healthy enough to play, to give him a chance. I think it could be a defining moment for Klay. We talked about Steph battling through this injury to see if he can give them something, whether that's 10 to 12 to 15 points, stretch the floor, knock down some critical threes. I do believe that if the doctor says okay, Klay says okay, I think Steve, it's imperative that you put the presence out there on the court and you force Toronto to have to defend against that, whether he's healthy or not.
He's never missed a playoff game, so obviously he's going to be chomping at the bit.
I heard, for what it's worth, and I don't know how hard their practice was, that KD actually looked better than Klay did in practice. So take that for what it's worth.
Time now for a big story. Let's move to the Lakers, who had a lot of trouble finding somebody to take their head coaching job, but have been practically hoarding assistant coaches ever since. Reportedly, they just added former Nets and Grizzlies head coach Lionel Hollins to Frank Vogel's staff, which already includes another former head coach, Jason Kidd, who is reportedly the highest paid assistant in the league. All right, the question here is, does this plan of creating a super team of coaches, you got Jason Kidd at the point. You got Lionel Hollins at the two guard. Maybe they can get Herb Williams on the staff. The super team of coaches, is that going to work?
Yeah, I think it should. In the era of super teams, why not super staffs in terms of on the sidelines, all this coaching experience? And I think it's a muscular move, twofold. One, obviously, Frank Vogel may be looking at his roster construction and saying, okay, I want someone to have other attributes besides myself. I'm known as a defensive-minded coach. Who's going to mend these fences? Who's going to be relatable to the guys? So a Jason Kidd comes into mind, a Lionel Hollins comes into mind in that. But it's the Voltron effect for respect. If there is a mindset that LeBron James won't necessarily respect Frank Vogel individually. How about collectively? How about all these guys just walking into a room saying, we are the coaching staff, even though I'm the head coach. Maybe you demand respect that way.
Man, that sounds good.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Not gonna work.
And I want, it's look, if in a perfect world, it would work exactly like that.
Right.
Knowing the personalities and knowing the array or disarray of the Lakers at this point, I have a hard time seeing how it's going to work. Frank Vogel is probably the least volatile, and is a great guy, but the presence is not going to be there. And we know how LeBron James works. He finds the person that's going to do his bidding, and he does it in a passive-aggressive way. There are just too many guys that are assistant coaches that I can see end up leading that charge, and then your hierarchy of power is all screwed up. It sounds good.
Doesn't it work on the court? Like, the whole reason the super teams and roster construction is even a thing is because you want to stack the deck. Why not stack the deck on the sideline?
But I want to know, and Jim, you can speak to this better than I can. If I'm playing, I want to know who's in charge. I want to know who's making the decisions. I want to know who I need to talk to. And if it's not the head coach and it's an assistant coach, well, why is he the assistant? You're immediately setting up a scenario where there's going to be a conflict if you don't like the way things are going. And based on the way the Lakers went the last year, there's probably going to be a lot of opportunity for guys being unhappy about the way things are going.
But didn't we see this in Cleveland tonight with Ty Lue on the bench, head assistant?
Yeah. And where did it go?
And where did it go? Hmm. It was Ty Lue. Yeah. And to your point, too, a lot of question was asked, too. Magic really, at the time, before, and Laker organization really liked Jason Kidd. Well, why didn't you hire him as a head coach? Well, you had some issues here and there, Milwaukee, what happened in Phoenix. But yet still, you put him on the staff. So the order of hierarchy, yes, Frank Vogel was there. But where does it go from there? Lionel Hollins has full credibility. I'm happy for Lionel. First of all, he should have been in conversation since some other head coaching jobs. Okay,
you could make a case he shouldn't have been fired.
He shouldn't have been fired at all. So I'm happy for Lionel because as an African-American, you really don't get those chances again. Great. So now to get back on the – but I'm going to go back to this. I'm going to take it up top, the trickle-down effect. You can have the best coaches you want. But if you don't make the right moves upstairs in the front office, all this will trickle back down to the product on the court, to me.
I think if you create chaos on the sidelines, it could dirty up what you bring in as well. You can put together a great team, but if there's chaos and discord on the sidelines, the only way this works to me is if Larry Bird is the head coach and then you hire these powerful assistants. If Doc Rivers is the head coach, then go ahead. Put Mike Woodson on the staff. Put Ty Lue on the staff. Put anybody on the staff. Because Doc Rivers has a lot of credibility as a former player and as a coach. Larry Bird's credibility as a player was so unquestioned that you could put Rick Carlisle and Dick Harter on the staff, and there's no issue. When it's tiny Frank Vogel, I just think, who are you looking at when you're running up and down the court?
What about a Steve Kerr, younger Steve Kerr, with a Mike Brown, who was a former coach of the year? Not the same?
Steve Kerr got a lot of rings, man.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we know that. We know that.
A lot of rings.
And he was upstairs in Phoenix, too, and I think the point we're missing.
I'm talking about even before he got this.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah. The point I think we're missing, too, though, when you're talking about attracting free agents, okay, they're not looking at the assistant coaches. Hmm. Their agents are looking at what's happening in the front office. You know, and do I really want to send my client to what's going on in that Laker organization? Yeah. And that's, I think, a lot of stuff that's going on right now from the agents I talk to and people that I'm talking to is that their eyes are set upon that. You know, Frank Vogel was an afterthought. Okay. But that goes back to what happened upstairs.
Right. Right.
To me, you got to commit to a vision. And they're not.
Agreed.
They're not committing to a vision. Let's have one voice.
Lionel Hollins being hired brought the subject up. But this went sideways once they hired Jason Kidd. Because who does LeBron James have a better relationship with going in? Who does he have more respect for? He's played against Jason Kidd. He's lost in the finals to Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd sees the game the same way he does. Jason Kidd's played in the league. Frank Vogel has none of those. And maybe somehow, some way, he can gather and gain the trust and confidence and respect. But he goes in not having it with guys sitting next to him in positions under him that have more respect than he does. That's just not a formula
for success.
You think
he has more respect for Vogel or Holland?
Who?
LeBron.
Holland.
You know what's interesting? If you look at the Lakers franchise since Dr. Buss took over, was that 1979? Mm-hmm. And obviously, Jeannie Buss for the last 6 years. The Lakers have had issues upstairs. You go all the way back to the hiring of even Pat Riley when that wasn't the initial choice. And you go back to the Shaq and Kobe era where we were like, what are you doing? How come you can't make these two players play together? Why does it have to be one or the other? Right now, spiraling out of control. I think they have a vision. Their vision is we're a family-owned business and we will work on this internally and things will turn out from that dynamic. But what they don't have is a commitment to the explanation, a commitment to the messaging. They don't have that. Jeannie is not getting in front of any of this. But I think it's weird. A lot of unintended consequences, right. A lot of Mr. McGowan, but it's happened even before Jeannie. That's how the Lakers have rolled.
You know what this is? This coaching staff is a perfect reflection of the front office right now. Mm-hmm. You're not really sure who's in charge or who's going to be leading you or whose vision is directing the direction of this franchise. Because from everything I've heard, even the decision to hire Jason or to go with Frank Vogel, that was coming from different places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just give me one person, good or bad, tell me you're the one who is giving me the directions and has created the roadmap.
They took 8 people on the trips when they were going to the interviews and to the hiring. That's the sidelines right here. 8 people.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow the Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Let's move to the Warriors, who stole home court from the Raptors Sunday night with a huge shot from Andre Iguodala, helping to seal the deal. Iguodala has been a crucial piece of the Warriors dynasty, a fact that Steve Kerr says should make Iggy a Hall of Famer. Not surprisingly, Draymond Green agrees.
If the things that people say matters, then how couldn't he be a Hall of Famer? But we got another championship to win. And then everybody will probably just stop with the debate and just go ahead and say it. So I think we should just do that to help y'all with y'all debates.
All right, I'm not going to go first here. I want to ask you guys, should Andre even be considered a Hall of Fame candidate?
Boom, boom.
Man, you already know. Look, when in Rome, because of the requirements for the Basketball Hall of Fame, he should be considered. In my eyes, he's not a Hall of Famer. Look, move over Shane Battier, statless all-star. Here comes the statless Hall of Famer, right? Andre Iguodala is going to be a statless Hall of Famer. I don't think he should be. I'm hearing a lot of people talk about finals plus minus as his leading charge. You look at him, he has shutdown moments and his finals plus minus is the best on the team by a wide margin. You know who leads finals plus minus since that has been a statistic? Manu Ginobili, who is a great player, but also gave you regular season consistent moments to validate his Hall of Fame legacy. Mm. You know who's better than Steph Curry and plus minus in the finals? Draymond Green. Interesting. So it doesn't tell the full story. When you look at Iggy in his fullness, it would fall short of my credential as you being a Hall of Famer, which is, even by Tom Haberstroh's own messaging, his numbers don't jump off the page. But when you dig deeper, that's when I get off the conversation of Hall of Famer. You're damn good. That's what I give you as, you're damn good. But Hall of Famers don't walk around and it's not fluorescent in terms of how great they are. I say no Hall of Famer.
Yeah, look, first of all, let's be clear. When it comes to Halls of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame is more mixed and harder to decipher. There are definitive benchmarks for baseball and for football. With basketball, we've got Ferraris mixed in with Harley Davidsons mixed in with schooners. I mean, we got college and pro. Yeah. We got U.S. and international. We got women and men. We got commissioners and referees. All that said, Andre Iguodala, if you want to consider him for Hall of Fame, he needs to get in line. Ron Harper won 5 rings in a row, was an instrumental piece on any number of championship teams, had the same when he was on his own in Cleveland and L.A.,
yes.
had the same nice numbers without the winning. So I look at that. I look at a Horace Grant. I mean, where do you draw the line when you start to take indispensable pieces on championship teams, but nonetheless complementary pieces? We have to open up the door to a lot of other guys if we're going to consider Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, when you first hear it say Andre Iguodala, Hall of Fame, it doesn't, I don't think, equate in that regard because of what you said in regards to other players who are probably more deserving on a numbers basis. A lot of guys, too, like Ralph Sampson, didn't have a great pro career, but because he was 2-time National Player of the Year in college, the hype and everything, he was able to get in. Walt Bellamy is another one. Bill Bradley is another one. It's a lot of guys that are in the hall based on more criteria than just their pro careers. A lot of it had to – Calvin Murphy, what he did at Niagara, that himself got him pretty much in there along with a, you know, a pretty average career, not great, but very good. Iguodala, what he's been able to do for 4 years when he was in Philly, I think it was 06 to 10, he averaged about 18 points a game. Other than that, he's a 12.5 scoring.
Right.
In college, he only really averaged
nine
points, 12 points one time, 2 years while he was there. But what he's been able to do on this platform, on this stage at the big moments, that, you know, he got a gold medal, a FIBA championship, he has a finals MVP, it all sounds good. But when you put him up against a lot of other people who've gotten in, a lot of people gotten in with less stuff. So the consideration is there, but I agree with you in regards to, hold up for a second, there's a line there first.
Ben Wallace is not in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think you and Jim have kind of almost talked me into he should be considered rather strongly. I agree with everybody else. He wouldn't make my Hall of Fame. However, again, what you guys have described is there's all different. There's several paths to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Right.
The NFL, the Pro Football Hall of Fame is the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You got to ball in the NFL at a high level to get in. You can ball out in college. You can be a great referee. You can be a great. You know, there's a lot of different things. And so what this guy is great at is performing in the NBA Finals. At crucial times, he is great. And so now he's constructing a road that's never been taken to the Hall of Fame, but maybe he's a trailblazer.
You know, it's interesting, to your point, only one Cedric Maxwell Finals MVP is not in the Hall of Fame. Only one.
Okay.
All the rest of them are in there. So if I'm Iggy, I'm sitting back waiting for my name to be called because you're not going to play me like you did Cornbread, all right? But they may. Look, if you're sitting there saying I'm better than the worst dude in the Hall of Fame, of course he's a Hall of Fame.
I'm so glad you brought this up because we put a lot of weight on Finals MVP.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at exactly how Finals MVP is selected. Mm. You have 8 media members who are on deadline, who have just finished a momentous event. They're caught up in the passion and the emotion of that. And by the way, you got somebody from the NBA coming by. The game's not even over. Coming by saying, can I get your vote? Do you have your vote yet?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's decided by 8 people. So let's slow down on just how vital or important being Finals MVP is.
That's a good point.
Because it is a flawed
okay, not to push back because you probably know better than me. I thought it was 11. One, it should be an odd number, obviously, in voting. It shouldn't be even. But two.
You're probably right. I'm thinking all-star.
Right. The way it happened.
Still, 11, yeah. 8.
It was LeBron got 4 votes. Iggy, 4. And
No.
Okay.
That's not what happened. No.
That's not that one.
No. He got his 7 votes. And he, no. It did
no,
not
that
happen.
Was.
I know, but no.
Layer it 2.
Not happen. It did
you
not
know
happen.
What I'm saying.
No, but it did not happen. It was just cleared up yesterday.
Oh, good. Because I was like, what the hell?
We heard from the NBA on this.
Yes.
But I think you make a hell of a point, though, that the Finals MVP isn't a measured discussion, debate.
We don't sit back.
We have no time to reflect. Hand it to somebody over the shoulder and keep on writing on deadline. It's a different deal. Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson's back. We're joined now by former Pro Bowl linebacker, DaQuell Jackson, Darnell Smith.
Ooh,
you got a new fresh shirt on, huh?
Yes, sir.
Real one.
Real one.
Woo, I'm feeling good today.
Hey, damn. Wasn't that joint?
Yeah, that was it, baby.
I hate it after that.
Let's get popping. What's happening?
We're going to get it going with the GOAT, Tom Brady, who was preparing for his 20th season in the NFL and seems just as motivated now as he's ever been. But Brady gave Patriots fans some concern after he posted this picture on IG with the caption, "Treat my first like my last and my last like my first." Sounds to me like Brady's giving us a hint here. Should Patriots fans be freaking out?
He's giving you a hint that I still appreciate the moment, and I'm showing humility. That's what the actual verse means. It's like, never get lost in the sauce. Never get caught up in your accolades and your success. So he's reminding y'all, I'm acting like I'm a sixth rounder still, and pick 199. I love it.
Yeah, and he also is going into his 20th season. Now, we have to be, you know, the reality of the situation is he could retire at any point, either next year or the following year. So these fans need to hold on. This guy hasn't shown any signs of slowing down, but this is nothing. This is him appreciating, like you said, the moment, the journey of a 20-year career.
Hey, man, this is Tom. Tom know what he's doing.
Yeah.
It'd be different if it was a guy that tweeted all the time. You wouldn't pay attention to it. But every now and then, Tom throws something out there.
Yeah.
Right.
Just to get kind of get things started. And that's what Tom is intelligent. He's smart. Right. He's going anywhere. I doubt it, but.
Oh, I'm going to play the other side then now.
Okay, let's go.
Since I'm going to play the other side. Maybe he is put it. 20 years, 20 nice round number. He done won six Super Bowls. Maybe this is his last.
I just think he finally heard Biggie. I mean, you know, he ain't the hippest dude in the world. Kind of busy. He's like, oh, this is fresh. Let me tweet this out. Yeah, that's 30 years old.
All right, next.
Switching over to some baseball, New York Yankees outfielder Clint Frazier is taking some heat after playing what he calls the most difficult game of my professional career in the outfield. Frazier made multiple defensive miscues in their Sunday loss to the Boston Red Sox, and afterwards he decided to avoid the cameras, ducking any questions about his mistakes. Frazier doubled down on his decision last night, saying, "No, I don't regret it. And to be fair, I don't think I owe anyone an explanation because it's not a rule that I have to speak." Guys, you got a problem with Clint Frazier ducking.
I'm going to tell you what I got a problem with. The Yankees knew early on that he wasn't going to come out and talk.
Right.
They didn't tell the media till they done stood around in his locker for a whole hour and then tell you that he's not speaking. That's low class. And it's a damn regular season game, man. Go ahead and answer these questions, man. Life ain't over.
No, you know what? I'm with him. I wouldn't do the same thing, but do you? But understand and be prepared that the likability in terms of your name in the media is going to go down, and they're not going to take care of you. So I don't believe the obligation. I just say if you're going to do it, just understand and realize the situation going forward.
I'm going the opposite way, bro. You got to do it.
You got to do it?
You got to do it because you know why? If he makes those plays and they're spectacular, he's right there in front of the camera saying how good he was doing it.
Real talk.
So when you mess up, it's still your obligation as a pro to beg, you know what, answer the questions and keep it moving.
Yeah, and we've all been there. There's been one game when we've had a bad game. It's like, you know what? I'd rather not speak to the media this time around because I might say something I may regret. Yeah. But you have to face it at some point.
Why? You have to.
Don't have your teammates talking
for you. You can take a time out. Just so you know what? I'll holler at you when everything comes back, when my emotions subside, when I am of clear thought.
When you're a stockbroker and you make a bad trade, you ain't getting interviewed about it. That's totally different.
No, okay, I get that. I get that.
In this world, you still have to answer to some of those questions.
And he plays for the Yankees.
No,
what do you expect?
But what do I expect? I expect him to go out there. His primary job is to play, not to talk about how he played. Your job is to cover what I just did. Can you still
the last time I checked, he was a professional athlete. He's a professional athlete. He's going to always have to deal with it. So
I understand, but tomorrow is a day I can still deal with what happened yesterday. Okay. No?
No.
Oh, just set him up for failure, huh? That's what we're going to do.
Oh, man, he ain't set him up for failure.
Tell you.
He'll be okay. Yeah, I messed up.
He ended up hitting two home runs later. He's all right.
Let's talk about our guy, Chris Haynes, who decided to put together a special basketball tournament featuring writers covering the NBA Finals. Over 40 basketball reporters and writers hooped against each other last night in three rounds of 15-minute games. Unfortunately, our boy Chris's team took the
Is he hitting with the black background?
In the very first game.
I didn't see him hit a shot. Against the wall, they ain't even
hit. Look at
him.
Oh, okay. Oh,
oh,
oh.
Oh.
You looking like you, Marcellus.
But look, I watched this. It got me thinking, how would a Speak for Yourself squad do?
Not well.
With Uncle Jimmy?
Man.
Oh, man. Oh,
Jimmy Ballers,
you mean, we get you? We get all y'all.
That's about it, because My man Jay, he can set some picks. We gonna post you up.
I can use up some files.
But we already know what D can do.
Yeah.
We already saw a D in action. You hit me with the 419. You thought I forgot about the 419 talking about looking for love. Okay. You thought you were slick.
I got
and then
you.
We had to bring back when I caught him in the gym getting ready to work out.
I'm petty, Jim.
Piggy Smalls were out there getting ready. You know what I'm saying?
Petty,
Piggy Smalls. Thought you got away with it,
get back is real.
I'm glad you did that. I like that.
Ask
about me.
Oh, we look a mess.
All right, time now.
We too big.
For Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Our squad huge.
All right, so yesterday I asked you guys if kids should look up to Jay-Z, and Whitlock, you compared him to Cardi B.
Man.
A lot of pushback online, so I want to ask you guys, is this really a fair comparison?
Well, of course I think it is. I made it.
It's a huge difference.
Can you elaborate? Because I could take that a lot of different ways.
Well, it's a huge difference.
I don't want to take you out of text.
The Quell and I nearly came to blows after the show.
Yeah, we did.
He stopped by my dressing room.
Ding.
Yeah. I was like, oh, you want to throw hands? but on the for real, I was trying to explain to the Quell yesterday after the show, and I'll do it again, is like,
okay,
Cardi B is what, 25? Jay-Z is damn near 50, I would think. And so if Jay-Z were entering the business now at Cardi B's age, what would his music sound like? Just like Cardi B's. Jay-Z has already told you on the Blueprint in 2003, I'm not rapping like Common, because Common don't sell. He's gonna rap however it sells. Cardi B is selling.
Yeah.
That's what Jay-Z would be doing right now if he were in the
rap game. Yeah, but that isn't the question. The question is there any difference between Jay-Z now and Cardi B? There's a huge difference in my opinion.
Well, yeah, about 25 years.
Right, you have a guy who's inspired us in so many different ways through documentaries, his philanthropy work. We've grown with him throughout his music.
No question.
If you don't compare anyone to Jay-Z right now, you have to use
All right, let me be a referee for a second. That's not how we usually compare anything on this show. We compare Jordan's legacy to LeBron in the now. Right. So we go what you have done to what you have done. We don't never shift it to, well, if you Jordan yeah, if, played
that's
now,
a whole different discussion.
We don't do that. I'm just letting you know that that's atypical.
Okay. Let me just say this. LeBron has put out, 16, 17 albums? Jay-Z's put out 15 albums or I don't know, collabs and all that. Cardi B's put out one. She's in the infancy of her career.
Yeah.
And so again, after LeBron's first season, we didn't immediately go to comparing him to who's the GOAT, who's the GOAT.
But we
did start the discussion about he may one day be the same.
So Jay-Z and Cardi B are the same.
Excuse me. Yeah, I believe.
What?
I'm trying to shift this so it's.
If Jay-Z started his career today,
but that's not what
he would be doing the exact same thing as Cardi B.
That's not what we're talking about.
You saying that if a dog had a square butt, he'd boo boo bricks? Okay, that ain't really what I wanted to say, but that I'm giving you on if. The question is: there's no difference between Jay-Z and Cardi B.
Oh my God!
Does Cardi B own?
She doesn't have a chance. But
that's what this said.
So they're not the same.
There is no difference.
And we don't know if she don't ever turn into
We him. Make this mistake all the time when in golf, Tiger Woods to who? Jordan Spieth. And guess what happened to Jordan Spieth? He's still a solid player, but he's not Tiger Woods. Yeah. He's in a league of his own. He's in a class of his own. Tom Brady, class of his own. Michael Jordan, class of his own.
Jay-Z,
class of his own. You can't compare someone who's starting this
Come on, man. I want us to a Jay-Z, a pioneer of his business.
I'm not saying her career is the same as Jay-Z's because she hasn't had a career. My point to Darnell yesterday was you got Jay-Z on a pedestal that I don't believe he belongs on. Because he ain't nothing but a pornography rapper.
See, that's where I disagree.
And agree. The music speaks for itself.
But initially, I don't even know if I really know what you said,
athletes being role models, kind of take it personal a little bit.
Yep.
Because you shouldn't look up to them.
I didn't say that, but go ahead.
But I'm just you're talking about being role models.
Yeah.
That athletes and people shouldn't look up to them, right?
No, I said that about Jay-Z.
You said athletes, too, though.
I have a whole different narrative on athletes. But, these celebrity athletes and multimillionaire athletes, yes, I think the era of money has changed athletes and the whole profession of sports to the point that, yeah, we shouldn't look at them as role models because money does things to people that is just undefeated. And so they're not really the proper role models anymore.
Again, it's some little kid in the neighborhood.
Gotcha.
That sees not just the money aspect, but the control and identify to say, if he can do this, if LeBron James can go out here and not just play basketball, but can have ownership over here. If Jay-Z has ownership, forget about the fame and fortune. That's motivation within itself to that young boy, to that young girl, that minority. So you can't clump it all in because it's money. It's things within that structure that allow a young person to look up to and say, you know what, I aspire to own through music, through basketball.
Right.
That's the difference with me.
Here would be my argument to that in terms of making any rapper your role model. If some kid out there goes down, I'm gonna be a rapper. Trust me, that path more likely leads to incarceration, being broke or in jail than if someone says, hey, I'm gonna be a sports writer, I'm gonna be a doctor, I'm gonna be a lawyer, I'm gonna be this. We have too many kids running around trying to be rappers. And the whole deal of modeling your life, taking inspiration from rappers, trust me, it is littered with far more failure. When you fail at rap, you end up selling dope in jail. Generally speaking, when you fail trying to be a sports writer, you might end up an English teacher at a high school. You may end up doing what Darnell's doing. There's a whole bunch of different ways to fail trying some of these other paths. When you go down that rap path and Jay-Z is your model and you think you're going to build up your street credibility, dealing dope and all this other stuff that Jay-Z did, trust me, the overwhelming majority of them end up dead in jail.
I think you're missing what his point is. And I'll be, get a little personal
for a second. I get it. Somebody can be rich
I'll bring it back to me, right? Yeah. When I was a child, I had the people around my life was my uncles and aunts, either a lot of them were either on drugs, selling drugs, or in and out of
prison. Got it.
So that was my reality, right? And what I identified with were people who look like me.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, the uncle who kind of saw this curious kid who had a really good gift that wanted to do more, he changed my course. The reason why I'm sitting here is because of him. And guess what? He was a guy that was in and out of prison. And I love him to death. He went on to live a fulfilling life. And I get it.
I'm not trying to dismiss those people.
Yeah, dismiss. Yeah, well, yeah.
What I'm trying to say is you can't take an individual anecdote that worked for you and apply
right,
it
we
in
can,
general
we all separate.
And think that that's a good path for the overwhelming majority of kids mentored by people in and out of incarceration. It doesn't end well. I had the same thing in my family. And again, I'm not going to embarrass anybody, but I idolized some people in my family. But if I chose them as my role models, trust me,
What I want to separate is what's inspirational versus what should be a role model, what should be
right,
a Mount Rushmore.
Right.
Completely different. Look, we're all from new circumstances. Let's talk about it. Jay-Z disqualified himself from being a role model for me and for my family when he talked about the things he did to become a success. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm inspired by your success. I'm inspired by your ownership. I'm inspired by how you went from rags to riches.
So we only.
But I am not inspired, and you're not a role model when you talk about the destruction of the community for your individual gain, survival, and then thriving from it. So there's.
He's not a role model because he had a different path. We don't know he had an option to do that. Maybe that was his best option at the time.
What, selling drugs?
No.
We going there, DeQuell?
We need to quit selling. DeQuell.
What?
Whoa, stop.
But why can't he be a role model?
DeQuell.
We got to quit trying to pretend to these kids that drug dealing is the only
option. I'm not condoning drug dealing.
Like it's the only option, because it's not.
I agree.
There's millions of examples. And DeQuell, we got to stop because we got to go to break.
Right.
And it's unfortunately, it me and Marcellus are the hosts of the show, so we just got to stop there. But DeQuell, I'm just going to tell you, and I'm saying this without any, you need to read more, bro, and expand your horizons. Reading is the key to understanding the world. It amplifies. It's a steroid for your understanding of life.
I'm not condoning.
I get it, but you're passing it off like his only option was drug dealing.
I'm not saying that.
So I don't want that message out there for kids.
I agree.
Coming up. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. And sometimes, maybe even the most, a little too transparent, too rough. I want to start off this by making sure I'm clear here. DeQuad said something in the last segment about you need to read more. That conveys that somehow I don't respect your opinion or don't think you're educated on the topic. I want to apologize for that. Mm. I know this is something you're passionate about. Sure. What we were just talking about is certainly something I'm passionate about. So I want to make sure we're cool.
We're cool. I appreciate it.
All right. All right, let's move to the NFL, where Le'Veon Bell finally showed up to Jets camp yesterday after taking some heat for not showing up to OTAs with his new team. There have been some reports that Jets coach Adam Gase didn't even want the team to sign Bell, but yesterday the running back tried to defuse any drama about his relationship with his new coach.
Business is business, so even if the report was true, obviously he don't feel like I'm not a great player. Maybe he just feel like, dang, maybe we could have got more great players. I don't know. But what I'm saying is me and him, our relationship is great.
All right, Marcellus, you buying this here? You think their relationship is great?
Absolutely. Let me also say that Le'Veon Bell looks like he is working out.
That boy looks like,
I mean, there's a look.
He's scouting from TV.
You got to sometimes. And you know, that's the only reason I get on the airplane to go see you in person, because I was like, you look like he's something special. He looks like he's ready for this moment. I will say that Le'Veon is being transparent. He's telling you exactly what you want to hear, but it's also through his experiences. When you're a star, when you're in any position of limelight, you know that sometimes your words get taken out of context. Your words can be exaggerated, sometimes even lied on. Le'Veon Bell's been there, so his reputation precedes him. Some people would look at Le'Veon Bell's like, oh man, that dude's nothing but like a good running back, that is a rapper, pothead stuff. And Le'Veon knows I'm much more of substance than that. So guess what he doesn't do? He doesn't allow a story to actually persuade him to the point of belief. He's like, I'm going to give you an opportunity to show me on your own merits, because a lot of times Le'Veon's not afforded the same respect. So I think because you've been through it, you're going to be able to do it and exercise a little caution.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think Le'Veon is in a great place, right? He looks great. He looks like he's a guy on a mission, ready to return back to form of his Pittsburgh Steelers days. And right now, the relationship, of course, it should be great. There's nothing to be concerned about. Yeah. This is a fun time, but we'll see in time if Adam Gase can put this guy back in positions for him to be successful, for him to be the Le'Veon that we've grown to love. And we'll see, because Adam Gase has a lot to prove himself. He hasn't proved he's a winning coach.
So y'all really believe Le'Veon, his coach is on record, like, yeah, he thinks I'm overpaid. And Le'Veon's good with that.
He's out to prove him wrong.
Yeah.
He's definitely out to prove him wrong.
So that's not all good.
No, look, right. You got to respect the business side. You got to respect there's a capologist up there. There's someone who's saying I could reduce you to get two smaller versions of you, but that may have been a better
Le'Veon
option.
Set out an entire season over his value to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Took less money to go to the Jets, and now the Jets' new head coach thinks he's overpaid, and Le'Veon's good.
Le'Veon's happy to be making money right now. He's happy to be in the camp. He's happy to be in a uniform. He's happy to be a Jet. And from the looks of it, it looks like he's in great shape. This guy is ready to prove everybody wrong. Right now, it's just noise. But we'll see how that noise carries over to the regular season. I tell you, if he's not getting his touches like you hit on, he strikes me as a guy that's willing to stand up for himself at all costs.
Yeah, and let's not confuse the two between you have an issue or beef with someone, or you're just on alert for this same individual. So I think you will take notice of what coach is going to do in terms of those touches. But look, we're 0-0 right now. Let's throw the roses in the air and pop champagne until tackle for losses occur, until the losses start occurring. Then you're going to see what this relationship is really about once that adversity
hits. There's no trust between these two. I worked for him in Kansas City early in my career, worked for a boss that told my bosses I was overpaid. Wasn't a damn thing he could say to me. I knew where he was coming from. Anytime my play wasn't called, this dude trying to prove to them I'm overpaid. When Le'Veon don't get the right amount of touches, the right call in the right situation, he's instantly going to go back to, oh, this dude thinks I'm overpaid. Mm-hmm. They're not good. All right, before we go, I'd like to offer famous golf coach Hank Haney some advice. Shut your pie hole. You're no victim of political correctness run amok. You're a victim of your own arrogance. your comments that you couldn't name any players on the LPGA Tour and that a Korean named Lee would win the U.S. Women's Open were flippant, dismissive, and not said to promote serious discussion. Your intent matters. Your former pupil, Tiger Woods, is not wrong. SiriusXM Radio gave you exactly what you deserve, a suspension from your show. From my vantage point, SiriusXM values you and just wants some confidence that you're smart enough to know when and when not to be flippant and dismissive. If you want to make a point about U.S. women's golf being dominated by foreigners, turn off the sarcasm and make the point thoughtfully and directly. Jokes can easily get you into trouble. You know how I know? Because I've been flippant, arrogant, dismissive, and in need of a comeuppance. Mine came in 2012 when I foolishly tried to crack a joke in the middle of Jeremy Lin insanity. I made a fool of myself, had to apologize, and had to spend several years fighting to win back the trust of my bosses. Tiger Woods didn't take a cheap shot at you, and he's certainly not trying to be the moral authority on women. Tiger's mom is Asian, which means so is he. His matter-of-fact rebuke of your comments is an example of Tiger being a moral authority on common sense. You erred. You don't seem to understand that. Via Twitter, you're now pretending that Jung Un Lee 6's victory at the U.S. Open proves your commentary correct. You tweeted, "Congratulations to Jung Un Lee 6 on your great win at the U.S. Open Women's. I knew you'd win. Who's the greatest predictor now, Stevie Johnson?" Your tweet attacking Tiger Woods is further proof you don't get it. You've been convinced by your social media echo chamber that you're a victim. You tweeted, "Amazing how Tiger Woods now has become the moral authority on issues pertaining to women. I spent 6 great years coaching Tiger, and not one time did he ever hear me utter one sexist or racist word. Now, in addition to being a 15-time major champion, I guess he thinks he's also a mind reader. Hashtag glass houses." Couple of things here. One, no one has to be a mind reader to know your words were inappropriate. Two, Tiger hasn't accused you of being racist or sexist. He said you deserved your suspension from radio. Let me be clear. I'm not alleging you're racist or sexist. I'm alleging you're embarrassingly arrogant. I'm alleging you lack self-awareness and have handled this entire situation childishly. I'm advising you to shut up. Let people speculate you're a fool. Don't confirm. Jim Jackson and Rick Bucher are back with us. Let's return to the NBA, where Kevin Durant may not be playing tonight, but there's still plenty of speculation about where he'll be playing next year. Yesterday, Charles Barkley was asked what advice he would give Durant about free agency. And as always, Chuck didn't mince words, saying, quote, "Kevin, you're one of the greatest players I've ever seen. You also got some of the thinnest skin I've ever seen. If he's arguing with these teenagers online, he's not going to be able to deal with that New York media. He's a great person. He's a great player. I don't think he has the mental makeup to play in New York." Ouch! I don't agree with him. I think New York is overrated.
Like, say it, man. I went to school there. Shut y'all trap, man. They're still talking about how New York are. They're living in the nostalgia and the yesteryear of when there were so few media outlets, and New York had that centric, that volume. But here's the quickest way I can say this in the best way as a DJ. Being in a lot of recording booths, making songs, you make them at a low signal level. But what happens is amplifiers, volume buttons, turn it up, and it can be deafening to you. But to me, I'm just talking into a microphone simply. Mm-hmm. So that's what's gonna happen when he gets to New York. It's still gonna be the same KD in volume. Y'all just going to turn it up, but it's not going to have the effect on him.
Everywhere is New York now.
Yeah.
With social media, you're always subject to it. And forgive me, but tell me where one of his social media spats, one of the times where he expressed his opinion, affected his play, affected his relationship with a teammate or a coach or a corporate sponsor. There's two things I know about New Yorkers in general. And yeah, I'm going to paint with that broad brush, and that always gets us in trouble. They like to state their opinions, and they like to think they're elite. You know who else thinks that way? Kevin Wayne Durant thinks that way. He is one of their own. I would think that it's more likely that they will embrace him as long as the team has success then somehow the noise, he's been living with the noise. He's been inviting the noise.
Right.
Something he didn't do in Oklahoma City, I don't see him backing off, and I don't see it affecting him.
Two things. One, you cast it clean, bro. I had to say that. I had to get that thing.
Appreciation situation.
Before I talk about the Kevin Durant, you was up there looking nice, but you took the words out of my mouth that if all that noise around his tweets or his fake Twitter account and going back and forth affected how he played, then I would be like, yeah, maybe so. Mm. But I think Kevin, the way he's built, yeah, he's always going to be like that. He's always going to push back. I don't care where he's at. He can be in Utah. He's going to push back.
Yeah.
But him being able to perform on a big stage, to me, is the biggest question. Will he be able to do it in New York? No question.
No,
because he is who he is.
Does this mean we just all chartered a boat to Whitlock Island? Because generally, not a whole lot of visitors there.
Well, what do you mean? You'd rather be on Barkley Island?
No. I'm just saying it sounds like we're in agreement that this is an overstatement by Chuck.
It's
that
dated.
New York
it's,
is somehow going to
it's just a
negatively
dated
impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he played, this was a reality.
But your point, Rick, though, it's never affected. And so we can all say he's thin-skinned, but it ain't stopping him from putting it down on the court.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.